I was not great on the bike for a triathlon. And so someone was like, you should try cyclocross. And I kind of went all in. Like, I went and bought a bike before my first race, even. And I was like, all right, I'm either going to hate this or I'm going to love it. And I did one race and I was like, what the heck? Where has this been my whole life?
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. Yeah. This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around yeah. once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Repeat on the dude's run.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Really excited to bring you today's conversation with Raylan Nuss. I'm a big fan of her and what she does. And we also happen to be teammates for a year back in the day. And for any of y'all who follow me on social media or have listened to the podcast, you've probably heard me mention in the past how much I love basketball, following the NBA, all that sort of thing. And also that I have an interest in shoes and sneakers, Nikes, Jordan 1s, typically, most specifically. And anyone who has hung out with me or maybe like shared an Airbnb or traveled, that sort of thing, will know that I travel with a nice pour over coffee kit, like with a scale and specific kettle and funnel and specific filters, all that sort of thing. All of these things, love of NBA basketball, love of sneakers, love of good coffee. These are all things that Raylan introduced me to or reintroduced me to. So when we were teammates, these were all things that she brought to the table. And I remember just being like, damn, what a badass. Like, she's so cool. I want in on some of this. So credit to her. But she's got a lot more going on than just that. Obviously, she is one of the top cross racers in the world, certainly in the U.S. She's current Pan American Games champion, second at Nationals, and has a whole lot going on beyond that as well. And it was awesome to catch up with her. Big thanks to her for giving us a little bit of extra time. Hope you enjoy this conversation. I also want to say a big thank you to 1UP USA, who plays a pivotal role in my life and my job, basically on the daily, but especially on race weekends. We just got back from the Mid-South Gravel Race, my opening race of the year. More on that to come later this week on the podcast. We'll do a recap show. It's recap season again. But a huge part of my success there was knowing the course really well. And one of the extra steps we've taken starting last year and certainly moving forward is reconning as much as we can of these courses so I know exactly where to be positioning wise in different phases of the race. And having our 1UP rack on the back of the Bronco has been pivotal in that. Basically, we'll drive the course, and whenever there seems to be a key section or an area where line choice could matter, I'll jump out of the car, pop the bike off of our 1UP Super Duty rack, ride the section, load back up, jump back in, and off to the next section. And it's so fast. It's so efficient. This rack is so heavy duty and durable. You know, we know we're fine driving around no matter what the course conditions are like. And we just love this thing. I highly recommend you go check out 1UP racks at 1UP, the number 1UP-USA.com. They're 100% made in America. They come with a lifetime warranty and with free shipping on orders over $550. That's the number 1UP-USA.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you after the show. I want to give a little bit of background as to how we know each other. We were briefly teammates 2019? I honestly can't even remember.
Yeah, before, 2019. It was 2019.
Yeah, 2019. And what's fun, so we didn't know each other. We still don't know each other super well, but obviously we didn't know each other hardly at all going into that. But I knew of you, and I kind of, you know, you were this emerging talent, particularly on the cross side of things.
but I kind of got this sense like that you had these other interests, and it seemed like you'd be a fun person to hang out with beyond just being like a cut and dried bike teammate. And so you showed up, I think it was team camp, and you had these sick Jordans, and you like whipped out your nice pour like coffee pour over set. I was just like, damn. And pretty quickly, I don't think I've ever said this to you. I don't know that I've said it to anybody, but pretty quickly I developed this like, you almost had this big sister sort of vibe for me where I like ended up wanting to do things like stylistically that you did. Like I started getting into shoes. I started caring about basketball again for the first time in a long time. what else? Anyway, to this day, I've carried a lot, like cared about coffee, like good coffee. I decided that, oh yeah, it is worth bringing. So anyway, you, these things rubbed off on me, that year that we were teammates. And I just want to say thank you for that. And sometimes people will bring up the fact that I like shoes now. I'm like, thanks, but no, like it's Ray Lynn, like go talk to her about shoes. Can you talk a little bit about, kind of your background and how it is that you ended up in this sport with, you know, kind of these other influences, it feels like. I know basketball was big in your background, but, you know, you have a fashion sense, some things that aren't always the case in cycling you bring to the table.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you. That's so nice of you to say. That was such a fun, like, you did. You came out to St. Louis and you guys were like basically just wanted to have a meal and just even talk to me before we even moved forward. And then we did like a little training camp in LA and we went to a Lakers game and kind of like popped around. And that was really fun. But yeah, my background, you know, coming from ball sports and basketball specifically, and I grew up playing basketball. Like as soon as I could walk, I was dribbling a ball. And I was also a swimmer and a runner, but basketball was just always kind of my bread and butter, and being involved in the team sport and like having like a good camaraderie, and we would hustle, we would like do all these fundraisers so we could make custom Nike ID shoes with like our number on the back of them to match our jerseys, you know? So that was like the vibe since I can remember, honestly. And so it's just kind of in me, and like even through now cycling, it's just kind of like what I like to keep, you know, keep going. It's like that's me. But yeah, getting into cycling is kind of crazy because I didn't even know cycling was a thing that people did, like to race and make a living. And when I graduated from college and stopped playing basketball, it's like I think a lot of it is, you know, I needed to have something else because I'm so competitive and like need something to train for and like stay fit. So I got into triathlon and I was working full time at Pfizer. And I think, you know, really like being a student athlete my entire life, and I was a biochem major, and doing that and playing basketball where we had 3 workouts a day sometimes on top of kind of like a heavy school load is like became normal for me. So when I started working a full-time job and like being in an office for 8 hours, I would like sneak out during lunch break and go do some yoga or like go to a park and run. And so I was like used to doing multiple things at once. And I think that's kind of, you know, that transition for me almost, I never stopped doing a sport. Like it was straight from basketball, then like into triathlon. And then I was not great on the bike for a triathlon. And so someone was like, you should try cyclocross. Funny enough, like I thought I was fit, you know, and I would go on these group rides with these like masters men, you know, like local masters guys, and they would just be dropping me. I'd be like off the back and I would just be getting so frustrated. Like what the actual heck, you know, like how am I getting dropped? Like I know I'm fit. But that's what intrigued me, I think, so much about cycling is like the way you're using your muscles and your pedal stroke. And it was such like this big learning curve for me. It was like this new challenge. And I was like, all right, like I'm in, like I'm going to commit to this. I want to get good at it. And someone was like, cyclocross, you can do this in the off season for triathlon. It'll help you with your handling skills. It's fun. And I kind of went all in. Like, I went and bought a bike before my first race even. And I was like, all right, I'm either going to hate this or I'm going to love it. And I did one race and I was like, what the heck? Where has this been my whole life? All in. It was like the best thing that's happened to me, you know? And then I still kind of did the tri thing, but then kind of, you know, that phased out the more serious I got into cross. And I went to Jingle Cross. And I was racing like the cat, like two women's field or something. I wasn't in the elite field, the UCI field, but then I stayed and watched the UCI race. Jingle Cross is kind of iconic because it has Mount Crumpet and there's like a DJ booth on the side of this massive run up that's called the Grinch, you know, and it's got like, they're like actually DJing up on this hill. And then there's like this big beer tent to the, on the other side of it. And so everyone, it was a night race too. So there's like lights, people are drinking, there's like music playing. And I'm just like, what is this? Like, this is so sick. There's a bike racing and a party going on. And I think that's really just like what has drawn me to cyclocross because it is so fun. And it's like a really great spectator sport. There's so much energy. It's chaotic, but it's also like beautiful at the same time. You know, like the way people are like hitting ruts and like hitting lines and like the way you can move your body. It's so different than like any other cycling discipline apart from maybe mountain bike. But, you know, you need to be athletic to do it. And I think that's really where, you know, like hopping on and off the bike and being agile was like weirdly similar to basketball in a way, you know. And so I was just drawn to it. And it's 50 minutes all out, you know, so it's kind of like, I guess, similar to cross-country running in a lot of sense, like the way your fitness is. And I was just kind of made for that. And yeah, so long story long, that's kind of how I got into cross.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, so before we talk about kind of your trajectory in cycling specifically, I want to rewind a little bit and touch on where this first phase was happening athletically and kind of that transition into triathlon and everything. Where did you go to school and maybe give folks some background on the level you were playing basketball at?
Okay. So I went to an NAIA Division I school and it in Missouri, it was called Central Methodist University. And right now, actually, they're the number one ranked team in the country, which is sick.
Damn.
So, it's kind of sick seeing, like, you know, my school is, like, really elevated. And by the time I was a senior, we were making it to the national tournament. You know, our game was, like, elevating. And, you know, I was blessed with being able to get, you know, a full ride scholarship to play, which was, you know, a big draw for me. And I was, like, 2 hours from home. So, it was kind of like, I was away, but I was kind of close and my parents could come to all my games still. But yeah, I mean, we were solid. We would beat NCAA Division I teams. And I think what's cool about NAIA is you get transfers from, there's like more foreigners because the transfer rules are different for NAIA versus NCAA. So yeah, we even get like D1 players transfer down because, and they wouldn't have to sit out type situation. But yeah, so we were good. I was, and in my senior year, we made it to the national tournament. I was an All-American, and it was kind of like a really fun way to end my career in basketball.
Yeah. Transitioning into cycling, well, actually, first triathlon, was it weird to come from a sport that has, you know, a culture of, like, there's a certain cultural cool factor with basketball, I feel like? Especially at the professional echelon. Collegiate athletes, you know, like you were describing earlier, like you try to emulate that. You want to be a part of that culture. Moving triathlon, yeah. I don't know that a ton of people would describe triathlon as like necessarily pushing the envelope culturally or fashion-wise.
Yeah. yeah.
But was that weird, you know, as someone in their, you know, early mid 20s, was it weird to change environments in that way and kind of like cultural environments, or were you focused enough on the athletic aspect that you didn't think about it too much? Like, did your friend groups totally change, all that sort of thing?
No, not really, actually. I didn't really, there was like one other female I think that I kind of made friends with throughout like racing tri, but that was the thing. Like I was kind of disconnected and I was also so just into like the performance aspect and just trying to like get better personally that I was just sort of doing my own thing. And like the groups in St. Louis were all older. So I never really saw them as like, they were friends, but not like people I would hang out with after, you know, we would go on a ride or something. That was the biggest thing. I think I was like, I got to a point where like the open water swim, like at the start just was honestly a nightmare, like getting kicked in the head, like you're swallowing water, like people are scratching you. Like it's so physical that I was just like, I hated it. And I like was dreading it every time. I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm not even having fun anymore. Like I'm not connecting with people. Like, you know, I like diversity. I like culture. I like things that are different. And it was like, I was at a nationals and like everyone was kind of dressed the same. And like, there was not much energy. It was really serious, which I went on race day. I am really serious, but you know, there's just no like vibrancy to it, I guess you could say. But I will say like, I think triathlon and people that are really good at it and dedicated, it's such a gnarly sport, to be doing three disciplines like that, especially at the Ironman level. Like it's honestly nuts. And like some of the like longer distance gravel stuff, you know, that I'm about to start doing and stuff that you do, like they're doing that, but then they're also like running a marathon afterwards. Some, you know, I'm like, it's insane. It's really insane. And they go fast too, which is crazy. So I do have love for the sport of tri, I think. And now like some of the super sprint stuff is actually pretty fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, for me, it just wasn't a good fit. And I wasn't like in love with it, really. It was just a challenge at the time.
Yeah, totally. So moving into cross, obviously you played basketball at a high level. And you improved very quickly at cross, and we'll talk about how that's going in a minute. But obviously there's a phase where you're getting better. For you, it was a pretty steep curve, but in the beginning, you know, you weren't winning UCI races, obviously. Yeah. As someone that was really, really good at a sport before that, what was it like to kind of start over? And was it hard to be patient? Or did you love the process and, you know, didn't worry too much about the fact that there was a period of time where you weren't good?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what intrigued me the most. And like, I do go all in with something when I do decide to go all in, and I'm going to like do it until I can master it, if you will. But I was okay with being patient. I think it's, you know, I'm a Capricorn, so I'm like a really patient kind of individual. And like, I know it's going to come as long as I'm like, you know, dedicated to it. And I was super dedicated to it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do literally my training to a T, you know, like as creative and, you know, different as I like to be when it comes to like my training and like regimen and stuff. I'm like pretty on it, you know? I was okay with it. It made me want to do it more because I'm like, I know I can be better at this thing. So I was like, it inspired me even more. And then like racing against, you know, women that were then doing well over in Europe, it was just so inspiring. And like the amount of American women that were getting like top 10s in worlds over in Europe, it was just like, this is what I want to do. This is really cool. It's possible. I was here for it. I was along for the ride.
Yep. In the last couple of years, it feels like you, I don't know. You describe your trajectory. It feels like in the last couple of years, I don't want to call it a breakthrough because it's been a step-by-step process, but sure, you're like one of the three best in the country, I would say, like very consistently. Like you win UCI races, you've been second at nationals 2 years in a row, I want to say. You're defending Pan American champion. And like the consistency is there too. And you've done, I think, a couple years in Europe now. What do you think you started to figure out the last couple of years that helped you kind of unlock that top level?
Well, and I will say, so launching the Steve Tilford Foundation Racing team and bringing on some high level teammates like Stephen Hyde, for example, Honestly, that was pretty massive for me, having a teammate like him who was a multi-time national champion, who was then my teammate, and we would go out and pre-ride together. He all of the things that he had learned over his career, he was now able to just kind of like tell me. So I was able to kind of like quick start some stuff like over in Europe or like even in the US, like figuring out some nutrition stuff and like how to really start to work on my skills, because that was kind of where I was like, okay, I'm getting stronger, but now I've got to get faster on my skills. So having a guy like Steven, I went out and did a team camp where he lives, and we were motor pacing, we were hitting his like training grounds. And I think that was kind of what really kind of helped kind of kickstart that, the next level for me, I guess you could say. But also I think quitting my job at Pfizer was, was also a thing, because I was able to really train, and put in the hours, because to be one of the best in the country and like start to knock on like the top 20 UCI ranking, like you got to put in the time, because everyone's strong. And then it's like, who's got the depth, you know? And so it's really starting to kind of put those pieces together. So really, I think those two things, like having good teammates and then also quitting my job to be able to dedicate even more of my time to it. Those were really the two recipes. And then once Steven retired, now like I have Curtis White on my team, and he's like been doing cross his entire life and is just like a heap of knowledge. So it's that to me is like, I like to keep people like that near me, you know, that's going to help me get better and also just be good people to be around on top of it all. So yeah, I'd say that's kind of what's really pushed it forward, I guess.
Yeah. So a minute ago, you kind of mentioned the Steve Tilford Foundation team in a way that makes it sound like you put it together. Did I hear that right?
Yeah. So that was kind of my baby. To be fair, the Steve Tilford Foundation is not my baby, but it was like,
right.
Yeah.
So am I like, I feel like I'm not under a rock enough to have totally, like, you haven't talked about that a whole lot, have you? Like that you built that? I'm sure within the cross community, many people know. I'm not part of that cross community, but you don't make a deal out of it on social media or anything. Is that common knowledge and I'm just a dummy? Or
I don't really know, if we're being honest. I don't, you know, totally publicize that this is, you know, I'm the owner and like founder of this team. Because it was like a team effort. It wasn't like it was just me, because we did have one of the founders of the Steve Tilford Foundation was also passionate about it. And, you know, there were moving pieces, but at the end of the day, yeah, it's kind of, that's my baby. I mean, I had a privateer program with an apparel company and with Mini and with Trek at the time. And that was kind of like the foundation. And then the Steve Tilford Foundation came on board and they wanted to launch that. And so what better way than to do it through like an elite level program that I already had the foundation for. So yeah, it was kind of more or less, yeah, that's my baby. And now I'm, continuing it on. Yeah.
Amazing. That is awesome. Let's talk about it, because there will be a decent number of people listening who are not hardcore bike racing fans.
Cool.
Let's talk about who Steve Tilford was. And why the foundation matters to you and how it came about that a team was launched with that as the title sponsor.
Well, so I actually never had the privilege of meeting Steve Tilford. So the kind of the connect was through a Devo kid that really kind of helped out my mechanic at the time. And then it's really kind of a complicated story, but then Joe Schmalz was another piece of the puzzle, and he was kind of an ex-roadie, and he also wanted to start racing cross again and start racing at the elite level again. So that was kind of like this like community that was kind of moving like around the Steve Tilford Foundation. And Steve Tilford had passed away tragically, and the community was really rattled by it. And I think what was cool about Steve, and I've read his blog now, and that's what he was known for, was like this blog where he had no filter. He's going to speak his mind, but also he was really good on the bike, like Mountain Bike Hall of Fame. He was kind of one of those athletes that sort of like pioneered like racing multiple disciplines and going over and racing in Europe. But he was really against like the whole doping situation. And he was like very vocal about that. But I think the biggest thing and the reason people connected with Steve Tilford, from my understanding, is that he genuinely cared about like the community, and he would rock up to like local races and like know everyone by name. He would like give someone like his shoes if they needed them, you know, or like any, he was always down to help someone out. I think Lutz and 99er, which is a Leadville qualifying race, he was winning the race and there was like a woman who was like on the side cramping, and he stopped what he was doing and like helped this woman up, like gave her like food and water, and then continued on finishing on the race. It's like, that's the kind of guy he was. And so it was, you know, really important to me to be able to kind of like emulate that and like keep that going and like be really community driven. And, you know, make sure I take time out of my day to like, if someone wants to come up and chat or whatever, like I'm always, or anyone that's a part of the team, we're going to be paying that forward. That's really like the root of it, is to keep his passion for cycling alive. So the reason the team became a thing was they were launching the Steve Tilford Foundation. And what better way to do that than like an elite level program, because Steve raced at the top level of the sport. So they wanted a team in his name. So it kind of, and me being from the Midwest, and I had a Kansas connection. My dad's from Kansas and I'm a huge KU basketball fan. So I quit my job and I moved to Lawrence, Kansas, which is where the University of Kansas is at. It's like a really fun town, and it's actually got a vibrant cycling culture. And yeah, we're just kind of hubbed it out of Lawrence, Kansas, and kicked everything off with kind of a bang with the team. And we knew we could get a broader reach with that and really be out in the community with that. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So having race programs that are athlete driven and cross is not too unusual. I think one of the, I don't know about first, but definitely highest profile people to do it was Jeremy Powers and really like legitimize it as a route. That said, doing it was undoubtedly a leap of faith for you in some ways, especially I bet coming from a really structured background, like collegiate basketball. It was kind of like, whoa, now I'm running. This is a different side of sports, high level sports, you know, doing the administrative side as well as the actual athletic side. And yet, like, we're seeing more and more athletes, regardless of discipline, do it that way, even when they have opportunities to be on a more traditional like factory team. Can you talk a little bit about the discovery process of launching your own program and building it to the point where it's so dang professional that someone like me didn't even know that you were running it?
That's actually a good thing. Yeah. No, you know,
it is kind of crazy. It looks like fucking sick, Raylan. Like, you look like a factory team. I mean, you are, but
I mean, that's kind of how I want to operate. You know, I want to create this opportunity for American athletes to like have a really dialed platform, because there's only so many factory teams and there's only so many factory teams race cross, which is kind of like none. And Cannondale Cycle Cross World was not a factory team for Cannondale, but they were heavy with Cannondale. And then when they folded, it was like, oh my God, is the sport actually dying? You know? Yeah. But I was so headstrong on like running a team and having a program where athletes could have a home, because I was seeing teams fold, and also I needed a place for myself. But I was a chemist for 6 years, you know. I did have a business minor, so I like had a small bit of knowledge of business, but like, who remembers like their minor classes in college? Like, probably nobody. Like, my economics class, I think I like, you know, slept half the way through, you know.
But yeah,
I'm definitely just teaching myself and like doing all this on the fly and quite literally fake it till I make it. And there are times where I'm like I got to call people and like ask for advice, especially when it comes down to like, I was writing my own contracts and stuff. I'm like, I got to like chat with people, like make sure I'm like doing this. But it also was kind of cool because like, I just did it my way. You know, I'm like, well, I guess we're going to figure out if this is going to work. And kind of going at things from a different perspective than like the traditional background, which I think is fun. And I think a lot of like the sponsors that I work with were intrigued by that a little bit. Maybe some a little like leery of like, does she actually know what she's doing? You know, so I got to kind of, I have to prove myself. And that's fine. I'm here for it. I love doing that. But yeah, I'm like constantly learning, like constantly. I have to like take a QuickBooks class on like accounting because I have, you know, I had to start an LLC. I have like a business bank account. I got to do taxes now. I'm like paying contractors, you know. Mm-hmm. Like how does sponsorship money going to come in? How do I, you know, do taxes on that? You know, it's like that's kind of the biggest learning curve right now is like the financial aspect of it all. But making things look good, like that's my favorite part. I'm like, all right, now like I can pick what this is going to look like, who my teammates are, like who is on the staff. Like, so I know in my mind that I can build like the best team possible. That's kind of like, that's the fun part. And then being creative with it and hiring really good photographers who've now become my best friend, you know, and like just letting him do whatever he wants. Like, all right, you want to like paint all over us? Like, that's fine. You know, like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Let's be weird. But yeah, so I'm constantly. Is this Kenza? Yeah, Kenza's my guy. Shout out Kenza. He is like kind of the mastermind behind a lot of like what makes us look good because he's the one taking the photos, you know. I still got a ways to go, that's for sure, but I think it's a good start.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the intangibles of the success of the team, because one of the things that really struck me this year watching y'all from afar was when Curtis won Pro Nats.
Yeah,
which he's been, my understanding is he's been chasing a national title for a pretty good while.
Yeah.
And
18 nationals.
Yeah. The way that seemed to just light up everyone that was part of the program, on the one hand seems like, well, it seems like that would happen. That's obvious. But at the end of the day, cross is like mountain biking, a pretty individual sport, mm-hmm. on the actual race course. And sometimes that can kind of bleed over into, how a success ends up feeling for the rest of the people on the team. Like it's, everyone's happy, but it's not the same as if a basketball team won the national title or something.
Yeah.
But for you, for y'all, like it was just this explosion of excitement, and like your excitement for Curtis was just like palpable. And it's clear that there's some pretty cool team chemistry there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Whether there's anything like as a team owner, team manager that you like, is that something you pay attention to? Is it something that maybe just comes about because of your team sport background and it just feels natural? Have you even thought about it?
Oh yeah. I think about that a lot. Like I am very picky. I'm very picky. Mm. If someone like rocked up, like I'm the world champion, I would of course give them the time of day, but also if they're not like a good person or someone that I think I could get along with, I'd be like, I would rather have someone where they care and they want to like contribute and, you know, we can like watch a movie together or like make dinner and it's not going to be weird and we can actually hang out because we spend so much time together on the road, you know? So, and even down to like our staff, like that matters just as much, you know? But I do think that's comes from my team sport background for sure. And like team dynamic. And I coached basketball like right after I graduated for like a hot minute. And like, I love firing a team up like that. That was what I did. I was a point guard, you know, that was like my role. I was the floor general. But Yeah, I get goosebumps even like still like genuinely thinking about when Curtis won nationals. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever been. It was such a perfect day. It was like a Hallmark movie. I mean, what would have made it more perfect is if I would have also won nationals, but like I still had a good race and like I went out and like put it to Clara for, you know, a couple laps, you know, and I was like, all right, I did my thing, did what I needed to do. And then for Curtis to just like the amount of passion, and I think it's because, you know, what's cool is like, yes, we started off as teammates and it was kind of this weird thing where I was now his like team manager and he was like trying to figure out, and he totally changed like every sponsor, and he'd been on Cannondale since he'd like started racing really. So this was like a massive shift for him. And so, you know, us figuring each other out and then kind of like developing a friendship, we did a road trip from Baltimore to Waterloo, Wisconsin for the first World Cup. And we went in my camper van and Kenza was with us. So it was the three of us. And we kind of like did this road trip and we did it on the cheap. So we got like one hotel room. So we had like a sofa bed and like our two beds. We were like proper like cyclists trying to like do a road trip, you know, and we yeah. like hit it off and we just had so much fun. And I think, you know, we really started to develop a friendship through it, which was cool. Like he knew I had his back. Like I was not going to screw him over. You know, like I would come to him with like any sort of like knowledge I would get from the sponsors. Like there was open communication about everything. And so I think that he finally started to trust me maybe a little bit. And yeah. And then like throughout the whole season, like seeing how much he cared and like how hard he works, and then to have this, and I knew how bad he wanted to win that. Like we would have phone calls and I'd be like, Curtis, you just need to like start manifesting. He's like, what is manifesting? I'm like, you know, like put a picture of it on your phone, like of the national champion. He's like, well, I'm sleeping in American flag boxers. I'm like, yes, you're manifesting, you know? so funny. I love that guy so much. And yeah, just like how much he cares. And then I was watching that race and I was like running around like crazy. And there was a moment on, it was like two to go and Eric Bruner had crashed. And then I saw like Curtis's face. Like I literally could see it in him. Like he like got that second wind, you know, and it was snowing. And like he had, he's like from that area. So we had like his whole like crew was there. And he, yeah, it was just the coolest thing I've ever been a part of. Like to my teammate just won the national championship in like a actual battle. Like it was a really good race, and tactically he did everything perfect and he'd been trying for 18 years, you know, and he got it. And it's just like, ugh, no one deserves it more than him and how hard he works and everything. And it was just like, yeah, I didn't even care that it was like because he was wearing my team, you know, jersey or whatever. It was just like him as a person. I'm like, this is so sick. Like he deserves this more than anyone. So I had also become like a big fan of Curtis throughout all of it, you know, and also just like a friend. So that was really cool. But yeah, for them, for the team and for the Steve Tilford Foundation, like it was huge.
That gave me goosebumps too. I mean, I sort of already said this and I don't want to sound too negative, but it, like caring that much about someone else's success is a little unusual in cycling, I think.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, maybe to be fair, like because Curtis and I aren't competing against each other, so I'm sure that does like help, like, you know, but even if I had a female teammate and we were coming down to it and I knew how much she cared, you know, I would still be stoked because at the end of the day, yeah, you are a team. But I think that does help, maybe help a little bit, but yeah, I don't know. I just seeing how much he cares.
Yeah. And being like actually being friends, going on road trips together, like that chemistry definitely goes far. Okay. Let's talk Eurocross. You, are at a point where you've achieved a lot that someone in your position would want to achieve. You've won UCI races in the States. Your Pan American Games champion. You've won silver at Nationals 2 years in a row. Beyond the obvious of winning Nationals, what do you want to achieve in this sport at this point? Clearly, pursuing success in Europe is at the front of your mind. You had a really solid world champs ride.
Yeah.
the racing over there, it doesn't matter what discipline of cycling it is. It is a different game. It's a different level. I guess the only exception could be gravel, but European gravel is catching up very quickly.
Yeah.
What was it like to first go over there and race Kokcida or any of the others?
Namur,
just like to feel the magnitude of those events. And I don't know, I haven't looked at your first UCI Eurocross result, but I'm guessing got your ass kicked. And then be like, I want to do this and I want to get better and I want to be successful in this arena.
Yes. And that for me is the next step. So I, you know, my trajectory has been kind of like, you know, on par. And I think, yes, winning nationals, that's definitely high on my to-do list. But then I also want to go over to Europe and I want to back it up. You know, like I get into the top 20 UCI ranking. And then when I go over there and I'm just like, oh, in the World Cups, I'm just not on par with where I know that I can be, you know, in terms of how strong that I have gotten and how well technically that I am like making massive strides. But it's like a whole nother sport over there. I mean, it really is. It's like I have this other like thing I have to master now. And it's like the soil is different. The speed, it's so much faster. And I think because a lot of the women over there race road. So it is just natural. It is way faster. And people are, their skill set and their, the races are faster. And then like they're doing it in even more technical courses. So my skills do need to elevate and I need to get stronger. I need more depth because what's interesting for American Cross is we have Pan Ams and we have Nationals and now we have the USCX series. So we have like multiple events we're kind of like peaking for. And then we go over to Europe right after our Nationals. And then it's almost like we've already peaked twice. So it's like we're like going over tired. And so now I, you know, it's a pattern in Curtis and I, after this past world in Hoogerheide, it was like, as soon as we got in, all the stuff was loaded, we got in the van and we started the drive back down to Sittard where the USAC home was. We were already talking about like, oh, what are we doing different like next year? Like we're fired up more than ever. And I think we, as Americans, we have to go out at a little bit different. But I am really excited actually about the gravel season because I think that's going to come into play for me to get some good depth. So when I go over to Europe, I'm not like smoked, you know? So really using the gravel season actually to like help make me stronger and faster for cross. And I think that's going to be legit if I can do it well and like properly and recover and stuff. But yeah, so that is the next step. I really want to be on a podium on a US World Cup and I want to be in the top 10 at Worlds. And that's, those things are very high on my to-do list. So I know I got a couple good years left in me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, top 10 at Worlds wasn't even that far away this year, right? Where did you finish?
Well, so this year was in the 20s, but when it was in Fayetteville, that's when I was close. Yep. I was 15th at Worlds in Fayetteville. And like when I am feeling strong, like there's a difference, like, and I've, these are like patterns that after you start to do it for a while, you can like pick up like when your pedal strokes just feeling like strong and like you're 45 minutes into the race and you're still like hitting. And you're like, yes, like I'm you feel like you're a god, you know, not really, but you know, you're just like, I'm on it. And that's like how I was at Pan Ams and Nationals. But then when it came to like Worlds, I was just smoked, like honestly. And I was doing okay. And then I had a crash. And it was just like, I crossed that finish line and was just totally smoked, like fell to the ground tired. When I crossed the finish line at Nationals, I was like, yeah, you know, like sick. That was so much fun. So there's like a difference. And I think that's part of the learning curve is how to go about keeping some of that energy and like re-peaking again for Worlds. And also just mastering Europe because it is like, it's their national sport over there, you know? So
yeah.
Yeah, that's the next step for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned kind of the importance of developing this greater depth, which basically is like your ability to handle and absorb workload. Like that is such a key. I think a lot of folks who haven't raced at the highest end of the sport, like it's easily overlooked as a really, really hard part of the job, is that consistency over the course of a long season. Like it's just, and then when you throw in all the travel and, you know, different types of courses, everything else, like that ability to absorb that workload and stay strong week after week is huge. And you mentioned that this dive into gravel, which isn't totally new. You've done gravel racing in the past, but you're racing the Lifetime Grand Prix. And I was so stoked to see you on the start list. And also, to be honest, a little surprised because it's a big commitment. Can you talk a little bit about the interest and the decision to kind of take the leap and how you're going to use it? Because I assume that cross is still going to be the priority. But this Grand Prix is a long, arduous year too, with a whole bunch of different variables and different skills involved and everything else.
That's funny. Well, I also surprised myself that I was like, you know what, I'm just going to apply. And a lot of it has to do with, let's be real, like the industry loves it. And my sponsors also love it. So it was like, they really wanted to see more gravel racing from Curtis and I. And I'm like, I am game, but it's almost to a point where there's just so many races and events to choose from. Like, are you going to do the BWR series? You're going to do, you know, like, what are you going to do? And it's just overwhelming, honestly. And so when I was selected for the Lifetime, I was kind of like relieved. I'm like, great. Like my calendar's picked. Like now I got a game plan. Like I'm going to like dial this in. I think it's spaced out really well. These like long, fast, and the women are strong as hell. So I know it's going to push me and gravel, like, you know, and I work really closely with my coach, Chris McGovern, who's also the mechanic for the team. So he knows how much load I have, even from like the travel, like the training and like running the team. He knows everything that I'm doing. So we have a really good relationship, but like he describes gravel as like, it's this sport where you have to have tension on the pedals the whole time because you're pedaling on this like weird surface, which that tension in the pedals will be really good for cross. And you can't, like, you can draft, but like, you know, you still gotta put down. It's so different than road. And you do have to be able to handle your bike, which is great. Like, you know, I think I'm here for that for sure. And yeah, I think if I do it strategically, treat them like single day classics, you know, that's kind of my plan. That's how I'm going to train. And I think it's going to make me stronger. I mean, the women over in Europe are like Lucinda Brand, Sharin and Clara, they're all racing full road seasons. Clara's doing all the spring classics, you know? So, as long as I can recover really well and just stay honest with myself, I think it's going to be really good for me, but it is a long season. So, I'm hoping, knock on wood, that the first bit that's through the spring and summer, I, can like have solid results at. So, once we get into cross season, like the few that do overlap with the USCX series that I would drop, then I just won't go to. So hopefully that stays the case. So then there's not like shit, you know, like I got to also now like figure out what I'm going to do. But I'm pretty fired up over it. I think it's interesting. Like, the way that the schedule lays out and how different the courses are. I think it really is a good test for an athlete and it comes down to like nutrition and tire selection, which is like similar to cross in kind of a way. Like you gotta like pick your tires and your gear ratio for a certain course. And that's, so I'm like, I got this, like, this is what I do already. And now we're just going to times it by 10 for the length. So it'll be fine.
Yeah. Awesome. No, that's great. It is such an interesting, it's funny how the sport, especially in the States, goes through these phases too, where, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s, there was the Norba series and it was this incredible nationwide mountain bike series. And then cross really had this rise. And I remember the USGP series was just so next level. And I would tune in every weekend and watch it live. And, And now there's this Grand Prix thing. And I think everyone's really curious how, like, what its life cycle will be, what its ceiling is, all that sort of thing. But it is a really exciting period for athletes. And obviously, like you mentioned, brands are really into it too. And it's a really awesome opportunity. And it's cool too that, because I was really curious in year two, you know, how it would evolve in terms of who was actually interested in participating, from overseas would kind of be like, yeah, I think I want to make that my thing. And then who from other disciplines like you could see it complementing, you know, their main objective. And so I think it'll be really, I think one of the keys is like continuing to have these different people who are involved almost for different, like similar goals. Everyone's trying to succeed at them, but kind of bringing different backgrounds to the table. So I'm just so stoked that you're involved. And I think it'll be like your storyline will be a cool one for fans to follow, I think, as kind of a crossover athlete. What does training look like right now? You said you just wrapped up. Well, can you talk about your new program yet?
Yeah.
When does that get announced?
I mean, it's known, it's like public knowledge, but I shot like a video this weekend that will like formally launch it alongside the European campaign at the end of the month. But yeah, we could totally talk about it because people should watch out. We're gonna, So I am now with Ponnermal and I am Destination Everywhere United States. So Ponnermal, I could just like talk literally hours on why I love that brand and we're just so on the same wavelength with everything. Just really
good
people.
Can you give us the 90-second version about why you love the brand?
Oh my God, I don't even know if that's possible. Well, they make a beautiful, beautiful kit. And for me, I really care about that. I love style. I love fashion. I want to look good. And for how much I train and how much I ride, like I want to look good and be proud of whatever it is that I'm like riding my bike in for 5 hours. You know, I don't want to like, I like to have nice like materials and like all of that matters to me. And they care about that, but they also care about like art and it's Ponnermal, like not normal. They like to do things differently and like take different approaches to things. And I just really am drawn to that. And they just have such a good crew in Copenhagen. And when I just flew over after nationals, I mean, they like rolled the red carpet out for me. And long story, but my bags didn't make it. So I had none of my clothes. You know, I literally had a hoodie and a sweatpants and like running shoes. So like not even my nice shoes, you know, and like a toothbrush. And they were like, the female employees were like giving me their sports bras. They like got shoes so I could like ride in their trainer studio. But it's like, they're a Danish brand. So, you know, they love things that are like really clean aesthetically. And yeah, they're just so great. And they're just good people on top of it all that just love to have a good time. And also, they love cycling and they love the racing aspect of it instead of just like, you know, the lifestyle, like ambassadors. They love their ambassadors, of course, but like they care about racing and like UCI level racing, which is really cool to me because a lot of brands, it seems like, go more like the lifestyle way, but they care about that at its core. And also, they love cyclocross. And so for me to be partnered with brands that love cross as much as I do, it's like match made in heaven, really. So yeah, working with them has been great. And now it's like this next step with Ponnermal that I will be kind of spearheading their Destination Everywhere, which they have been running in Europe now for several years. But they have a woman that will be running Destination Everywhere in Europe for the first time ever. And now they have me in the US. So they have two women kind of leading this project. And it's really just to kind of pull the community together. And the brand's growing in the US. So there's only one flagship store in San Francisco. And they're partnered with some really nice shops throughout the country. So really, I'm just about to go on this massive tour from coast to coast. Literally, we launched in LA this past weekend and we're going to have a finale in New York City. And that'll be in September right before Cross starts. And we just are going to throw some parties. We're going to have some like really fun group rides. And, you know, their group rides aren't, you know, they're for dedicated riders too. So it's like, we're going out on like 60 to 100 mile rides. And and it's supported. Like the van is like halfway, you know, and there's snacks and like water and like, you know, it's kind of like a cool thing, but, yeah, that's going to be me now in my van. That's wrapped with like our team palette and everything. And we're just going to be bopping around hosting rides and stuff. And yeah, so it's cool that they trust me to like launch this here in the US, which is fun because I can kind of like put my spin to it and just kind of like do it how I think it should be done here in the US. So yeah, look out for that because it'll be fun. I think anyways, but we're going to do some pretty wild stuff. So should be a good time.
Hell yeah. Yep. Sweet. Will you be sharing kind of dates for that tour on social and all that sort of thing, or where can people get a read on that?
Yes, that'll come through Pondermal's Instagram. They have International Cycling Club Instagram, which is kind of like their like culture side. Like they have their brand, which would also be on the brand, but also be on International Cycling Club's kind of like platform as well. But it's just the first time that a brand's like really done a full tour like this. Kind of like bringing rides to people because it is kind of a new brand in the US. And yeah, we'll be like going to like cities where there's, you know, no Pondermal even in any of the bike shops, you know, it's just like people that love to ride and just like love the culture and like love art and like doing other interesting things, but then like to push themselves, you know? So I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Sweet. Love it. Congrats. Fun stuff. Like you said before we started recording, living your best life.
Yeah. Living my best life. It's kind of crazy sometimes.
Sweet, Raylan. Well, thank you for getting me into shoes, into good coffee, reminding me the basketball is awesome. Oh, check this out. I don't know how grainy my screen is right now, but I have Giannis.
Stop.
Bobblehead Giannis. Got him in Sydney, Australia.
That's so good. Have you seen him play live yet?
No, I haven't. When's the last time you went to one?
It might have been after I won Pan Ams, the first time I won Pan Ams, because I was in Dallas. And then I won Pan Ams, and I bought everyone Dallas tickets, and we went to the Mavs game. And that was fun. That was a good time. We had like really good dinner, then went to a Mavs game. I think that was the last time. I don't know. I didn't go to one this past year, but I also want to, I've been to like some baseball games, but I haven't been to an NBA game for a minute, but I have to go to, well, I don't know. I don't have a team. I still just kind of follow players, but I'm going down to Miami for a Pondermal event.
Ooh.
And
yes,
I am trying to go to a Heat game, which
hell yeah,
super fun.
Every time, because the cycling side, I don't know if you feel this way, but cycling just consumes so much of my life. And then I'll just get these reminders about how sweet other sports are and that I also want to involve myself in different ways. So anyway,
it's kind of inspiring too, like to go to these events. You're like, oh, like it, I don't know. It inspires me to like my craft, I guess you can, like, if you will, but like I've been watching like the tennis documentary that's on Netflix right now, which has been really good. And the surfing documentary on Apple TV, and just kind of like how other athletes go at what they do. And it fires me up and it's really motivating. So I love just any sporting event. I just think like, it's like what we do. Like we dedicate our lives to this sport, and then to watch other people that have dedicated their lives to their sport, it's just like, it's like fires me up, you know?
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, I got to let you go, but last question, who are some athletes in different sports that you really like following or inspire you?
Stephanie Gilmore. She is an 8-time world surfing champion. And she does it in such a stylish way, like the way she presents herself. She's like really low key. Like she's not like on social media all the time, but she's got like the sickest sponsors, you know, like, and she's just cool. Like I've never met her, but she like just oozes someone that's like, she's just cool, you know? So Stephanie Gilmore is one. And I love, well, Sue Bird just retired, but Sue Bird, big Sue Bird fan.
Absolute legend.
Absolute legend, number 10, you know, that was my number. And Kelsey Plume right now, she's in the WNBA, and I really like the stuff that she's doing. And she just kind of launched this brand new like business where she's going to help women transition from college level to the WNBA, because it's kind of like a lot of what we have to do as cyclists, because females in the WNBA don't make as much money as guys in the NBA. And there's kind of this like drastic learning curve on like how you got to market yourself. You have to do all these other things and plus perform well in your training and like, you know. So anyways, Kelsey Plume's kind of another one who's kind of a bit of a badass and does like more things for and gives back to her sport. Yeah, so those are probably my quick hitters off the bat.
Do you think can, sorry, I lied. Not last question. What do you think? It's such a big question and it's fine if you have no answers, but what do you think can be done to elevate the profile of the WNBA and also close that pay disparity gap? Cause a lot of it is chicken and the egg. I feel like where, like it doesn't help that these athletes have to go to Russia or wherever else to make legitimate livings, you know, like, because for those that don't know, WNBA players can go play in overseas leagues and make like a zero more than they do in the WNBA. Like it's absolutely absurd. Crazy. Yeah. It's completely ridiculous.
That's a really great question. And obviously no one has the answer. Otherwise it would be happening. But I do think that there's been a shift, and with women's sport in general. And honestly, I feel like a lot of it has to do with the women's national soccer team, because they're just such like a force. And also, I'll go back to Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe. They're like a power couple, and they have also launched like this platform for women on social media called Together, and they just highlight women's sports, like amplify it. And I mean, I follow it because I'm just like passionate about all women's sports, but I think more people follow that, and it gives like more, it's social media. I swear. It's like, really, I think that's really a key, just to getting eyes on it with how cool it actually is. And I mean, it just comes down to like viewership. But soccer has seen the biggest shift, and the professional teams over in Europe now are seeing the same, like they're selling out in minutes for their games.
Interesting. So
like, they'll fill stadiums like that now for the women's games, which didn't happen years ago. And so like the movement that the U.S. women's national team has, like, I'm going to give them a lot of that credit, because they've been so vocal and like rattled cans, and they've like been demanding equal pay. And they're like, we sell out games. The men's team doesn't, like, we're actually winning. The men don't. And like, we are paid literally a fraction of what they're paid. And so I think that like has inspired a lot of other women in other sports to kind of like the same, like even in tennis and surfing. And it's just, it is a kind of this movement that I think is like legitimately it's happening, but it's going to be a slow progression. But a lot of it just comes down to like just people having the chance to like view it. Like I would love to follow the WNBA more, but it's just kind of hard to watch. But I will say like for women's college basketball, that's televised way more now than it used to be. And like the women are dunking like in the games, like it's actually, and the games are so good. So I think people are starting to catch on to that a little bit more. So it'll just take time, but I think it is moving in the right direction.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I totally agree. Granted, my perspective is coming from the male side of things, but it does feel like so much of it is just awareness. Like understanding how high the level actually is. I've had a couple of personal encounters. Well, speaking of basketball, Raylan has absolutely kicked my ass playing basketball for what that's worth. Good memory there. But like, I feel like it, and I sort of made a, I don't know if I made it too big a deal of this, but I did a 20 minute power. I helped Kate Courtney do a 20 minute power test a couple of years ago. Just sort of like leading her out and
motivating her, giving her a wheel to chase.
Motivating, making it more fun, you know?
Yeah.
It was so goddamn hard.
Like I
wanted to share that story, and then like on the climb in California where there's like 20,000 people, she was like, I don't know, 17th overall or something. And it was just sort of like, I knew that professional women are really, really strong bike riders, but there was such like a data point that I wanted to kind of share because I don't know, like most fans don't get to ride with you or with Kate or with Lucinda Brand or whatever. And like, if more people could just understand how high the level is, I feel like it's a very simple domino. And then once whether it's tennis or like the WSL, like these other sports you've mentioned, like the rest kind of starts to fall into place. And it's just getting that first domino to fall.
It really is. It's also really cool to see like a lot of the NBA players that hype the WNBA now. You know, Steph Curry's like a big one, you know, like he hypes the shit out of it and he goes to women's college basketball games. And like, I think that really helps too. It's like, look, there's also like the women are doing, they're training just as hard as we are. Like they're playing, you know, so I think that's big too. You know, it's like, it's a team effort to kind of get it to amplify from both ends a little bit, but it's fun. Like, God, it is just so inspiring to see how like the games are sick. And then when people start to recognize it, it's like nothing fires me up more than like seeing the amount of like views that the women's NCAA national championship gets. And I'm just like, yes, like finally people are like, you know, it's coming around a little bit. It's getting the respect it deserves. And honestly, I'm sure the Brittany Griner situation, as tragic as it was, I think that will, you know, maybe kind of like rattle the
camera. It's so true though.
I mean, it's a 100% thing ever, you know, like you never want that to be the reason things kind of maybe start to make a shift. But there also are brands that are like diving into it. And like Dove, for example, who makes deodorant products, who they sponsor and they like closed that equal pay gap, like ratio for the women's national team, like in the soccer.
Yep.
And there was a car company doing it too. It was Volkswagen. These other brands were like trying to like help fill the void because like this is sick, like they do deserve to be paid, you know. So it's a team effort, but I think it's coming around, hopefully. But yeah, watch women's basketball. It's sick. It's so good. Yeah, that's my plug. It is.
Yep. Good stuff. Okay, Raylan, thank you so much. That was fun. It was good to catch up.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, Payson.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to 1UP USA for supporting today's show. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, 1UP racks have become a really pivotal part of my race program, my job, just our lifestyle in general, obviously. Our favorite piece at the moment, a piece of equipment that played a pretty pivotal role in my success at Mid-South this past weekend, is their Super Duty double rack. Comes with a 2-inch receiver. The entire rack only weighs 46 pounds, but has the capability of carrying a huge amount of payload. You can carry e-bikes on these things, no problem. Carrying capacity of up to 200 pounds per bike spot, which is insane. And they're just so well engineered. Whenever I'm reconning a course, I can just hop out, pull the bike off in less than a second, ride a little section, put the bike back on the rack in less than a second, jump back into the car, and we're off. They're just awesome. It's the gold standard, quite simply. They're 100% made in America. They come with a lifetime warranty and with free shipping on orders over $550. You can go to 1up-usa.com. That's the number 1, the word up-usa.com. I want to say a big thank you to Lily McKelvin for editing and producing the show each and every week. She also is the one that churns out all of the video clips that go on the Adventure Stash Instagram account, and she manages that. So if you shoot messages over there on IG, questions, ideas, that sort of thing, she's the one typically getting back to you. If you would like to go see some clips from today's interview with Raylan, you can go to The Adventure Stash on Instagram and check those out. Speaking of interacting with the show, if you raced Mid-South, we want to hear from you. We're doing a recap episode. Like last year, we'd love it if you sent in some sound bites 60 seconds. You can do it on voice memos if you have an iPhone or whatever the equivalent is on Android. It's super easy. Just email it to theadventurestash@paysonmckelvin.com. Tell us how your race was, where you're from, your name, what your experience was like, all that sort of thing. And we will include as many as we can in our recap episode. That's a 60-second voice memo or less. Email to theadventurestash@paysonmckelvin.com. Thank you all so much for listening today, and we will catch you next week with that Mid-South recap episode.